All right. Before we start the clock, each side has 15 minutes, but I have a question. Anytime I see several people sitting at council table, will one person be handling all the argument, or?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
I will.
That you're David Edward Edsall?
Yes,
okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you. You may proceed. Good morning. Good afternoon, rather.
Good afternoon.
We've been doing this all day.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. My name is Tom Roth. I'm the attorney representing the appellant, Friends of Oceana Dunes. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Your Honor, Friends has appealed the district court's abstention order because the district court erred by misunderstanding and misapplying the traditional test under Younger, Burford, and Colorado River. In this case, none of those abstention doctrines can be justified. In fact, with respect to each of those abstention doctrines, the district court committed a clear error of law. Let me start with Younger abstention. In that case, the district court's clear error of law.
Let me ask you a question about that. Is there anything quasi-criminal about the dispute in this case?
None whatsoever, Your Honor.
So there's no way that the dune buggy riders or whatever, or the association that's acting on their behalf, can be punished?
Well, a state action does not involve that situation. The state action is simply what's called an administrative writ under the California CCP Code Section 1094.5, meaning that Friends challenged the decision of the Coastal Commission and Mr. Ainsworth as being unlawful under state law.
Sure, you're saying it doesn't protect those two birds well enough from the
But there wasn't a citation or anything else that could have been criminal, that this isn't a defense or a reaction to that?
No.
So it's kind of odd in the sense that it doesn't seem like your clients really care about the snowy plover, but they care about riding their dune buggies. But we have to decide this is an ESA claim, right?
This is an ESA claim.
And is this an arrow in their quiver? And should it be adjudicated in federal court? And do you think that may have factored into why the district judge said you don't belong there?
Right. I would quarrel just a little bit with your characterization that my client doesn't care about the bird. In fact, since I've represented them for 15 years, they've worked very closely with state parks. And this location is the most successful breeding program of the plover in the entire Western United States.
Well, but are they really about, is the name of their group Save the Birds, or is it Dunes, or Friends of the Dunes?
Right. The purpose of the group is to ensure access, all sorts of access, for public recreation at this location. And this park was specifically created to allow off-road vehicle recreation.
I don't see why this matters, why the motivation matters. It seems like what you're saying is we're dune buggy advocacy group. This conservation effort is going to be conserving the foxes, not the chickens. And if you conserve foxes, it's bad for the chickens or whatever those birds are called.
Correct, Your Honor.
Have I got that?
That's correct, Your Honor. And so because this
one... And that's so or it isn't, whether you wear a white hat or a black hat.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But there was there any issue regarding standing raised below at all?
No.
So what authority supports your argument that the Coastal Act 60-day limitation period also governs a claim arising under the ESA?
Well, I believe that any action in state court challenging an action of the any lawsuit in state court challenging the action of the commission or the executive director on its behalf is governed by Public Resources Code 30801. And that makes it very clear that there's a 60-day statute of limitation. But it doesn't provide any other exception for any other type of claim. And there's case law in California that says essentially any type of claim that you have must be brought within that 60 days.
So I guess, if we move past Younger and get into the Burford and the Colorado River, California requires that certain county judges obtain expertise in CEQA and related environmental laws. How should that impact our analysis of whether this case satisfies the first Burford factor requiring that the state has concentrated suits challenging agency actions?
Well, I don't think it should have any bearing. First of all, not every county has appointed a CEQA judge. And I don't believe in San Luis Obispo County there is a designated CEQA judge. And so in this case, it should have no bearing whatsoever. I'd add also that the standard is whether the state has focused all challenges to a particular type of administrative action in one court. It's not a functional equivalent standard. It's not patching together a bunch of other statutes to define if that's the case. The question is simply, like in Burford, has it assigned it to one court? In Burford, all challenges to the Railroad Commission action in that case had to be brought in one county, one district court in one county, Travis County, Texas. No other exceptions. We have nothing like that in this situation.
So would the district court here have to, if the district court were to decide the Federal Endangered Species Act claim, would it have to interpret any state laws or decide any state law issues to decide that?
No issues of state law come up in the federal claim. The federal claim is simply one issue. You know, when Mr. Ainsworth approved this permit, did he violate Section 9 of the Endangered Species Act? There's no underlying state issue that has to be resolved in any way. The federal issues are completely separate.
Do they overlap, though? What does the state? I'm not familiar enough with the state, California state environmental law here, but do they ask for the same inquiry into whether there's critical habitat that's being affected or a threatened species that's being affected? How do those interplay?
Yeah, so in our state action, we brought three claims basically under three statutes, one under the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, one under the Coastal Act, and one under the state endangered species laws. There's no such thing as critical habitat under the state laws. That's only a federal process. Only the Fish and Wildlife Service does that pursuant to the Federal Endangered Species Act. So there, I would agree there's factual overlap here because we're talking about
only on the Endangered Species Act claim, though, right? Or is there overlap on the other two claims as well?
Well, I don't think there's any legal overlap. There's no question under any of those statutes that the federal court would have to decide before deciding the Endangered Species Act claim. I'm just conceding that there's factual overlap in the sense we're talking about the same dust control program and the same area and the same environmental impacts and so forth. But we're not talking about any overlap in terms of legal liability or legal claims.
So the Colorado River Doctrine allows federal courts to abstain from hearing a case in deference to a pending parallel state suit, right? But if the suits are not parallel, if there's a substantial doubt that the state suit will resolve all issues before the federal court, then abstaining under Colorado is inappropriate. So can you tell me here how that fits in?
Well, I think the error that I identified in the district court's abstention order with respect to Colorado River analysis is that it's required that there be an exceptional circumstance because Colorado River is the rarest of all abstention doctrines. The district court believed that there was an exceptional circumstance, and this is in the record at page 19 of the abstention order, because this, in her view, the state court would resolve all issues.
Well, the California ESA doesn't protect one of the species that we're talking about here, right?
Right. The plover is not protected by any state law in this case. It's only a federal interest. Only the federal law protects the plover. And I think what the district court was saying is because she believed that the state action would moot the federal action, that was an exceptional circumstance. But I don't think that's
the
law.
She wanted the state court to address it. She didn't want to have to address it.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's in a nutshell. And if I may quote from the Nopsey case by the U.S. Supreme Court, the New Orleans Public Service case, quote, Colorado River does not say every time it is possible for a state court to obviate the need for federal review by deciding factual issues in a particular way, the court should abstain. And the court went on to say, such a holding would make a mockery of the rule that only exceptional circumstances justify a federal court's refusal to decide a case in deference to the states. So what the Supreme Court is saying, and I think this court agreed in its 2017 Seneca case, is merely mooting a case because you have concurrent federal and state jurisdiction, that's not an exceptional circumstance under Colorado River. That's not appropriate to invoke Colorado River abstention in that case.
Let me ask you this, because I think that the defendants, or the defendant appellees, are going to bring this up, that they're probably going to ask us to look at the 11th Amendment issue. And if I'm correct, the district court never got to that because the district court abstained on those three doctrines previously. Is that correct?
Well, the district court denied their motion on that basis, actually, below, and decided that the abstention stay order basically superseded it.
Well, so didn't really delve into the merits.
That's
so
correct.
Is there any reason, we don't even have the permit here. Is there any reason that we should look at, if let's just say, if we say, well, the district, they shouldn't have abstained, but the if the defendant appellees want to ask us to look at the 11th Amendment, do we really have a developed record for that?
Not at all. We've done no discovery on that. I don't think it's necessary to delve in that. I think the case law suggests that the court just look at the complaint, and if there's an allegation that these state officials acted in their official capacity and had a fairly direct connection to the enforcement of the underlying action, that's sufficient to qualify for Ex parte Young in this case.
Do you want to save the balance of your time?
I'd like to, yes, thank you very much, Your
Honor. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Deputy Attorney General David Edsel on behalf of Jack Ainsworth and Lisa Mangit. May it please the court, we're here today because the district court saw that this federal action was but one small piece of a complex puzzle playing out in state court with multiple lawsuits brought by the same plaintiff against six state and local government entities.
Let me tell you my big problem with this. As I read this, I was thinking, well, of course, abstention's fine. Middlesex. I've been applying Middlesex for years. And it seems like pretty good abstention under Middlesex. But then I realize and reread Sprint, and it looks like Sprint really changes things. And, boy, if it isn't criminal or quasi-criminal, it probably just doesn't matter that the state was handling the same dispute and there was tremendous overlap of the issues and the state might resolve it and all the Middlesex factors might be satisfied. It looks like all that matters is if it's criminal or quasi-criminal. It isn't, so there can't be any Younger abstention.
Your Honor, Sprint did narrow Younger, but we feel this action still fits within the narrow meaning
of
Younger.
Is it criminal or quasi-criminal in any way?
It's a civil enforcement action, and in Sprint, when it was describing what would qualify as a civil enforcement action, you're correct, it described quasi-criminal
situations. How is this a civil enforcement action?
It's the way that the Coastal Commission, the state and local the Coastal Commission as the permitting entity, is enforcing the Coastal Act.
That's what's going on in state court?
The state court is a challenge to a proceeding in the before the Coastal Commission hearing.
Are they going to punish anybody? I thought it was just to decide whether to protect the foxes with these green strips and so forth.
Your Honor, the Sprint case, we feel it. The concern was that a lot of cases had been courts had been abstaining under Younger when the underlying dispute was between private parties. And a number of the Ninth Circuit's post-Sprint cases where they denied Younger abstention, each of them had an underlying dispute that was between private parties. Cook v. Harding was a gestational surrogate contract dispute. Reinerson versus Ferguson was the underlying matter was a civil restraining order where the state would decline to said it was not planning to prosecute. So the way we read Sprint is that the court does not want to get in. It's, Younger should not apply when the underlying dispute is basically the state resolving a dispute between private parties, and that's not the case here. This was the state taking
you
action.
You would limit Sprint to private parties on both sides.
Not necessarily.
But Sprint isn't. Sprint is really about whether Iowa can regulate VoIP phone call charges.
Yes, but in Sprint, Your Honor, when the Supreme Court was analyzing the procedures below, it was a dispute between a national telecommunications company and a local telecommunications company over fees, and there was a federal preemption issue, and the dispute between them, it got withdrawn, and the state stepped in because they thought it was a dispute that was likely to recur. So they stepped in and decided to rule on this matter because they wanted to resolve this issue that was likely to recur, but the underlying dispute was
The state wanted to resolve whether its utilities commission could regulate charging by outside carrier or to outside carriers for VoIP calls, and the Supreme Court said it's not criminal or quasi-criminal. There's no abstention. The federal court has a duty to sit.
But I think, again, in Sprint, the court noted the underlying matter was at its core a private dispute. And, again, that's what I feel like the
– this is an alternative ground you're raising because the district court never found that this was criminal or quasi-criminal.
The district court found that it was a civil enforcement action. It did not
– maybe I'm misreading it. I didn't see it as a civil –
Your Honor, at the hearing at the district level, that was actually much of the argument was on whether it would qualify as an enforcement.
Right, but in the order, I don't see anything that talks about whether it's a civil enforcement action. And explain to me how this is a civil enforcement action. Isn't this just a challenge to a regulation, effectively, a state regulation?
Well,
the state wasn't reaching out and fining them. They didn't issue a citation.
No, but the state was acting on its own. It wasn't resulting from an underlying dispute. And we contend that it was a sufficient enforcement action based on precedent.
I don't get what you mean by enforcement action. Enforcement action means some regulatory agency says, do this or else. And if you don't do it, you go to jail or you pay a fine or you pay something that looks like a fine, but they call it something else. Something bad happens to you if you don't do what they say. And here, nothing bad was going to happen to anybody but maybe the birds and the foxes.
Your Honor, if I could speak to that and perhaps answer Judge Nelson's question also. The district court was citing to the case of Potrero Hills, which was admittedly pre-Sprint, and it also cited to the San Remo case, which was
But isn't that the problem? The district court never cited to Sprint. It never even looked at it within the
Sprint came up at the hearing, but it was not was not analyzed in depth at the district court. But nevertheless, we feel that within that narrowing, this matter still qualifies, that Sprint did not necessarily abrogate prior Ninth Circuit precedent in San Remo in Potrero Hills, which indicated that a party challenging a permitting action is sufficiently an enforcement action under Younger.
Well, but those seem to be two separate arguments. Whether Sprint abrogated prior Ninth Circuit precedent is a different question than is this a civil or quasi-criminal enforcement action. And there's no finding here by the district court. There's no analysis of whether this was a civil action. The district court doesn't even cite Sprint. So maybe that's the argument you have to take, is that Sprint doesn't apply here. If Sprint applies, you would agree that we can't look to the district court's analysis.
No, that's correct. Sprint, obviously, is a United States Supreme Court decision, takes precedence.
Well, not only takes precedence, but the district court didn't even analyze it under that construct.
It did not. It did not get into Sprint in depth at the district court. And, Your Honor, just to use my time officially, if I can dive into the Burford abstention.
Well, I want to ask you, we always think it's our time, so I'm going to ask.
Of course.
I have a couple questions I want to ask you. How would the district court's enjoyment of the permit impermissibly disrupt California's efforts to develop coherent policy? Would such a ruling be any more disruptive to the state's policy efforts than other federal suits challenging the decisions of state agencies?
I think so, Your Honor, because of the unique posture this case is in, where it is the Coastal Commission is the permitting agency, but as I mentioned, there are six government entities in a wide variety of postures. State Parks, the state agency, is the actual permit applicant. The Coastal Commission is the permit issuing entity. We have local air district. We have the state air resources board involved, and the County of San Luis Obispo and City of Grover Beach have ownership of parts of the property.
But you don't have anything that protects the plover And if the district court were to decide the Federal Endangered Species Act, they wouldn't have to interpret any state laws or decide any state law issues.
We disagree based on the pleadings, the allegations in the appellant's pleadings. In the federal complaint, they allege that there was take because the mitigation measures in the environmental impact report that state parks made were insufficient to prevent take. And so we think the court would have to look into issues relating to the EIR, the environmental impact report under CEQA. They also allege that they allege in the federal complaint and the state complaint that it's insufficient to prevent take under the Coastal Act's protection of environmentally sensitive habitat area. So we do think by the federal court ruling, for instance, if it were to rule that there was a take, it would invalidate the permit. This ongoing state action, which is going on, which is weighing CEQA, the Coastal Act, various local rules, the California.
But if it ruled, it would rule based on federal law. I mean, I think as Judge Callahan was saying, the plover is not protected under state law. What if there? Would your analysis change if there were two plovers remaining, and they really cared about preserving these plovers, and the federal court comes in and says, "Well, I can't touch it," and then in the meantime, there's no protection for these plovers. They die. They become extinct.
Your Honor, I would disagree that state law does not protect the plover. CEQA does mandate that impacts to federally listed species are examined in the CEQA process. The Coastal Act, there's case law in that we cited.
Is the plover listed in the California Endangered Species Act?
It is not, but
how would it protect the plover?
Because when analyzing under CEQA whether sufficient mitigation has occurred, whether the environmental impact report has sufficiently addressed significant impacts, impacts to endangered species are per se significant impacts. And there are cases where analyzing environmental impact reports under CEQA, the courts are talking about the concerns with the federally listed species. So
that just doesn't provide the same protections that the Endangered Species Act does in the federal courts. I mean, maybe it provides some analysis of it, but I just find this a little bit extreme to suggest I can't imagine Congress thought that its Endangered Species Act protection would take second fiddle to what states wanted to do here.
And, Your Honor, I don't think it's necessarily that the federal ESA claim is taking second fiddle.
How not? There's no direct analysis of the Federal Endangered Species Act claim. The district court said, we're just going to look at, see what the state court does.
Are you saying in the district court order there was no?
Yeah, the district court. Yeah. No, the district court order is saying we're not going to go further with the Federal Endangered Species Act. We're only going to look at what the states are going to do here. The state's going to do here.
Yes, it felt that given the basis under the three abstention doctrines, and it felt that given these state issues, it felt that the plover would be protected under state law. It noted that when it talked about
in there's the no analysis of that. I mean, I don't think you can. I'd be interested if you think that state law protects the plover to the same degree that the Federal Endangered Species Act claim does. I find that very difficult to believe.
I would just add that in the Coastal Commission staff report here, and generally in Coastal Commission actions, they account for the federal ESA. It specifically addressed that in here.
So then there's no reason to even have a Federal Endangered Species Act claim in California, because California is covering it all. I mean, that seems to be the argument here, and that's what's troubling, is it doesn't seem like a federal court should just defer to a state proceeding in a situation like this. I imagine there's hundreds of cases where there's a state environmental claim going and a federal Endangered Species Act claim going in parallel, and no one's ever thought that it's a major problem. And now all of a sudden the federal court's deferring to the state court? I would think it'd be the reverse.
I think in this instance it's important to see also that the district court issued a stay, and there are updates being provided to the court that it didn't dismiss.
Well, by the way, jumping ahead to the Colorado River doctrine, I don't think that a stay is even appropriate. The district court, as I understand it, under that doctrine, the district court would have been required to dismiss the case. So I don't even think the district court applied the abstention doctrines correctly.
Your Honor, just are you referring to Colorado River? Because I believe Colorado River does specify, or most of the case law says it's appropriate to stay when there's parallel state actions so that the federal court could retain jurisdiction.
I think it says it may be, and the most important word there is extraordinary. Colorado River abstention is extraordinary.
Yes, and we maintain that these are extraordinary circumstances.
Just because you have parallels, and just because there's a possibility that if it goes one way but not the other, it may be dispositive, doesn't mean there's anything extraordinary. I just don't see the extraordinariness. It looks like a pretty routine case. The state has protections for the environment and various species. The feds have protections for the environment and various species. And it just seems nothing extraordinary that both should pursue their concerns simultaneously.
I think part of the concern is that, that if the federal court were to rule here, these issues will likely recur, and that's part of it with the state law issues, why there's a concern to get a ruling in the state.
Colorado River talks about parallel state suits, right? And I think the argument that the appellants would make that the suits are not parallel because there is substantial doubt that the state suit will resolve all the issues before the federal court, and then abstaining under Colorado would be inappropriate. Here the state suit will moot the federal case only if Friends of the Dunes prevail. This is because the state suit does not contain a federal ESA claim, and the California ESA does not protect one of the species at the heart of the federal proceeding. So what Friends of the Dunes, so if they lose, then the federal court will likely still have to adjudicate the federal cause of action. As well, even if the suits were parallel, the other Colorado River factors, I think they would say, fail to establish exceptional circumstances, which have to be present when you warrant abstention. So I think that's the argument that they're making under Colorado River.
And I think when you talk about, you know, various what will be settled in the state court, it is important that, at least for Colorado River, it's not necessarily looking to the claims but the issues. And in their state complaint, they allege harm to the plover all over. They allege federal take and insufficient mitigation that's causing harm and take to the plover. They allege problems under the Coastal Act's environmentally sensitive habitat provisions. And the state complaint, it alleges, there's 63 times it mentions the plover, and it mentions harm to the plover all throughout. So we feel when the state adjudicates the claims there, it will necessarily have to address these issues with take of the plover, and then if the federal action's ongoing, some of these issues would be preclusive. They would have been tried and argued, and they would be preclusive in the federal court. As to the mitigation, which are the same allegations they are making in the federal complaint.
Okay, just really quickly, and I know you're over time, but I want to ask you about this because I think you've raised it about the 11th Amendment arguments. It would seem to me that I don't know how appropriate it is to address it here when we really don't have very much information.
Yes, Your Honor, the district court didn't even address that. Appellants were incorrect that it denied it. It simply just did not reach the question. And we believe
Don't even have the permit here, right?
No, the permit is not
right.
In the record.
So, I mean, it's going to have to be, you're going to have the 11th Amendment's going to have to be looked at with more information than what we have here.
I think that's correct, Your Honor. It was not looked at below.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate it, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't have a lot of additional comments. I just will note on Colorado River that there was an additional error by the district court, and that is that this court in the Seneca case in 2017 made clear that in the balancing of the eight factors that the court has identified, the balance must be weighed heavily in favor of retaining federal court jurisdiction and against abstention. And that's not the way that the district court approached this. I don't have anything else to add. I'm here available for questions if there's anything else I can enlighten the court on.
I don't think we have other questions, and there is nothing criminal about not using all your time.
Thank you.
So, all right. Thank you. This court will be in recess. Thank you.